Welcome one and all to another day here at the Damage Report. I'm John Arroyo. Today is a Tuesday, a wild news Tuesday. We do have one thing going for us though, and that thing is not the news. What it is the presence of Senator Nina Turner. Nina, as always, thank you for being here.
Good to be with you, John. And that upbeat intro music gets me going every time.
I know. Thank God we have that. It doesn't necessarily match how I feel sometimes about the news. As I've been watching the updates on some of the stories that we're going to be talking about roll in, but it does help a little bit. Although I hesitate to even say this to you because I'm not sure I want it to be ruined for you as it was ruined for me. But a couple years ago, J.R. Jackson told me that it's the exact same beat as in My Sharona. And I've never really recovered from that. But anyway, that's what JR said.
You made it your own though. That's okay.
Exactly. Well, in any event, thank you for being here. And to all of you out there, thank you for being here as well, regardless of what platform you're watching on. We're glad to have you here. We've got an awesome hour coming up with Nina Turner, where we're gonna be breaking down the ridiculous threats against AOC, updates on the Ahmaud Arbery case. We've got voting and gerrymandering and what's up with Biden? Nothing good, but maybe we can provide some advice for him. And then you can stick around for the last half hour. I'm gonna be breaking down some of these stories involving Dennis Prager attempting to rewrite the history of how the LGBTQ plus community was treated here in the US during the 80s. Kellyanne Conway wants to make some bold claims about what was going on in the Trump administration. We'll be talking about the partisan COVID death gap as well. So there's a lot coming up. Please hit the like button and share the stream if you haven't already. And you can send us tweets, comments, super chats, all that, and we will respond as we go. But with that said, Nina Turner, ready to talk about this stuff?
Ready.
But am I? I always ask the co-host, I should ask myself. But anyway, let's talk about this. Yesterday, a representative and American troglodyte, Paul Gosar, decided to appeal to the bloodlust of his followers by tweeting out a video in the style of the anime Attack on Titan, where he and other right wingers murder Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, Joe Biden, and others. I'm not gonna show you the whole video, but just so that you understand the context of this, here's a bit of what this congressperson tweeted out on his official congressional social media. Okay, so it's like a minute 30 and Nina Turner, are you familiar with Attack on Titan? I don't know how popular it's been in the past few years. Are you familiar with the anime that's based on?
No.
So the basic idea is that humanity is stuck in a walled off city and there are these massive mindless beasts coming at it that need to be killed at all costs. So in this case, that threat that's assaulting the last city of humanity was footage of immigrants. So they are the beasts that must be murdered in the context of Attack on Titan. And Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez was one of them. And a lot of the headlines about this are saying that Paul Gosar presented himself as killing AOC, which is true. His face is on there. But you'll note in that footage, Lauren Boebert is also the character that kills Representative Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Marjorie Greene gets to be the character that murders Congressperson Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez. Then later in the video, they do the same to Joe Biden. They kill President Joe Biden as well. So he tweeted this out, by the way, with any anime fans out there, because he definitely is an anime fan. He knows what Attack on Titan is, definitely. And that is what Twitter put up. It's hateful conduct, but it might be in the public interest, so they're keeping it up there. I don't know if it's in the public interest. I do know it's in his interest, but what did you make of this?
Yeah, I don't know how that is in the public interest. And these represent, they really gone too far, but they are just examples of what is, what's animating the minds of some people in this country. But certainly we want to hold elected officials to a higher standard, especially when it comes to interactions, not only with their colleagues, but even what we put out into the public domain. And this really is, and I'm being gentle here, this is really pretty much a bridge too far. It's unacceptable in every single way. and they should be checked for this. How can you serve next to somebody and you putting out that you want to be the one to kill them? And then again, marginalizing immigrants like they always do, continuing stoking the flames of the other. They're coming for our stuff. They're dangerous. The representative is dangerous. And this kind of thought process is dangerous.
Yeah, 100%. Also ruins one of the few animes I've watched. I used to like that show. But anyway, as I said in the pre-show, the third and fourth season also kind of ruined it for me. But anyway, so I've worked through the course of my life many jobs. Right now, I'm whatever the hell this career field is. But before this, I worked as a tutor. I've worked as a waiter in Tex-Mex Indian and Italian restaurants. I've been a caterer. I worked at a toy store for a while. And so my question to the audience is, in which of those jobs could I post a video of me photoshopping myself as murdering my coworkers and I would keep that job? Would they still let me sell toys if I had presented myself as murdering the other people who worked at All Wound Up, the toy store in the Northeast that no longer exists? If I showed myself murdering the bartender at the Italian restaurant I worked at, would I still have that job? And look, I had a lot of responsibility as an Italian waiter. I would argue Congress people have slightly more. So maybe the standards should be slightly higher, and yet they are infinitely lower. They're calling, we'll get to the tweets where they call for him to resign, but I'm gonna jump out in front of it and say, I don't think there is a damn chance of there being any consequences against him for this. What do you think?
No, there won't. I mean, the strongest consequence that we have since the leadership of the GOP, even if they do anything, is gonna be totally superficial. The only real consequence that we actually have is the ballot box. So whether or not the voters in the states that these three represented, because he put himself with some others to participate in the murder, whether or not the voters in that state and whether or not somebody's gonna rise up, even another Republican will rise up in those states and run against them. That's the true consequence.
And this is the guy whose his family put out an ad of like he had more family members in this ad saying don't elect him than I know of my family. And yet that wasn't enough. They said he's a monster. You can't trust him in a position of power, and they were 100% right.
Maybe now, one I want to allow against them, John.
That would be great, but they'd probably have to win a Republican primary. And Paul Gosar, he isn't risking his future by doing this. He is delivering one of the only things the right wants. They want the glorification of violence. All of these viral videos are like that. If it's Trump being Thanos and wiping out half the Democrats with snapping his fingers, or the Empire Strikes Back, like the Death Star or whatever, or if it's him beating the hell out of reporters, they don't have to deliver for their audience because their audience has been trained to just want the glorification of violence. And for some, it comes in this form. It's like, oh, it's just a joke. It's just an anime video. For some, it's following QAnon, the end stage of which is the gathering up of all their political opponents and having them all gunned down en masse. But it always comes back to the only thing I want, the only thing I need you to promise me is that there's possibly a time coming where these Democrats I've been taught to hate are gonna finally die. And we covered on shows like this, and then I guess we just have to continue with Joe Biden and Kamala Harris and Chuck Schumer as the counterweight to an increasingly bloodthirsty fascist party. So what are we supposed to do, Nina? And I say this to you, I say this to the audience too. What the hell are we supposed to do? How is a democracy supposed to survive when people like this can not only continue with this rhetoric, but that's the best thing he can do for his career is to picture. He should have just had a CGI of him, literally Paul Gosar, choking the life out of Ilhan Omar. Why not? Are his fans gonna turn on him if he does that? No. Why would they?
No, they're not. This is neoliberalism, neo-fascism. One is a quicker death, the other one is slower. There's a day of reckoning, and every single day something like this happens or something else that reminds us that the politics in this country, that not even just the politics, like if you think of it from a moral perspective, who Why would you do something like this already knowing that there is such a divide that has been percolating, I would argue, John, for a very long time? I think that just the election of President Trump or Donald J. Trump as president of the United States of America just brought it more up to the surface. But if we really analyze decades upon decades upon decades, this kind of divide, this kind of animus was always there under the surface. Trump just gave it permission to come to the top, and people like Gozar and the others, Marjorie Taylor Greene, the others, they keep sealing it with a house with a good housekeeping seal of approval that allows them and the people who thirst for this to continue along this path. They are the ones that are the worst, because as leaders, no matter if they disagree with their colleagues on policy, why does it have to turn into this?
Yeah, 100%, 100%. And look, I don't have a great answer to the question or whatever, but
no, me either.
John,
but there was a time. Can I just say one other thing? There was a time when there were duels, as you know, in this country, right? The politicians would just go out and duel one another, and you would think that in the 21st century we would evolve a little more than what we have at this point, and it is very clear that we have not.
Yeah. Yeah, looks like we're devolving. Look, the answer obviously isn't more Paul Gosars and Donald Trump. So that wing of the supposed, it's not even a part of the movement, it's just a grift thing. I obviously don't agree in, but we clearly can't just have the Bidens and the Pelosis. And this is not just in this clip. We're gonna do multiple stories today. The through line of which is they will not stand against this in a variety of ways. So we have to fight off the fascists, obviously, that should go without saying, but we desperately have to get out the Bidens and the Chuck Schumers and the Pelosis and all of them, because they will not save us from this. AOC has responded to the video that Paul Gosar put out of him and other wackadoodle right wingers literally murdering her. She tweeted, "So while I was en route to Glasgow, a creepy member I work with who fundraises for neo-Nazi groups shared a fantasy video of him killing me. And he'll face no consequences because GOP leader cheers him on with excuses. Fun Monday, well, back to work because institutions don't protect women of color." She's 100% there, 100% right there. She goes on, "Remember when Yoho accosted me on the Capitol and called me an effing bitch? Remember when Green ran after me a few months ago screaming and reaching for her? Remember when she stalked my office the first time with insurrectionists and people locked inside? All at my job and nothing ever happens." I assume most of our audience remembers that. Just in case, I wanna show you a brief bit of, this is back in 2019, before we elevated her from crazy rando to crazy rando congresswoman. Here is Marjorie Green.
To Crazy Ocasio, you come to this little thing and you open it up and you whisper into her.
Confession session.
This is confession.
this is Ocasio confession right there. What's
Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez? I'm an American citizen.
This is creepy.
It's hide and seek.
This is huh?
Hide and seek.
It's hide and seek. Dad, you're it. Guess what? You can't stay in there forever. Can you come out and play? Let's go.
All right, so we were, I guess she got the message before.
And since then, she's gone on to become a congressperson. The guys in the video either are participating in the insurrection or eventually will be locked up for plotting to murder congresspeople, I'm sure. And this is what she has been dealing with. And she and others, you know, there's threats against Rashida Tlaib and Ayanna Pressley and Ilhan Omar constantly.
Yeah.
There will never be any
Cori
protection.
Bush too.
And Cori Bush as well, yes.
Yeah.
And they're just supposed to take it. And we're supposed to hope that it'll just stop it stalking them in their office and anime videos. That eventually one of the crazy people that follow them who have more guns than brain cells won't eventually do something. And I dread that every single day. There have already been attacks against politicians, obviously, Gabby Giffords and all that. But I'm just terrified that the leadership doesn't care. They just leave these women out there to protect themselves.
No, they obviously they don't care. They're not using their power to make an example of this person. This should just not happen. In no world is this acceptable at all. And we just gonna have to just settle in on that. Let that rest right there. In no way is this acceptable. to make physical threats of violence against your coworker or anybody for that matter, John. And I love the examples that you opened up with, because there is no job on the earth except for this one that you could openly threaten to kill your coworker or coworkers and still have your damn job.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
And without that, nothing, consequence.
Need the video. Like, look at all of what it took for Marjorie Greene to just lose her committee hearings. She literally just said, it wasn't anime pair. Like, she just said, Pelosi needs a bullet in the head. Like, she, and that by itself clearly wasn't enough. You needed all of this stuff, the yellow star and the allusions to the Holocaust and the Jewish space lasers and the QAnon. And yeah, I think Hillary Clinton ate a baby's face once. And all of that together took her off her committee hearings and freed her up to be, you know, crazy independently more. And that's it.
And she got rewarded because that video you show, right, was her before she was elected to Congress. So that is the reward. That kind of crazy gets you elected to Congress in some cases.
100%. AOC's final tweet was, this dude is just a collection of wet toothpicks anyway. White supremacy is for extremely fragile people and sad men like him, whose self-concept relies on the myth that he was born superior because deep down he knows he couldn't open a pickle jar or read a whole book by himself. I like that. And I love that AOC can, you know, can joke a bit when I know that she must be terrified constantly of all of these crazies. And it's totally true. I mean, that's what these myths are designed to take people and give them a false sense of their own superiority. I would argue that if you were truly superior, if you were truly strong, you would perhaps as a representative deliver for your constituents and not just tweet out anime videos of you killing people personally.
How about that? And some people are more predisposed to believe in this kind of stuff for real, for real. And it just gives people license to maybe try to do this for real. And that in lies the problem.
100%. Ilhan Omar tweeted, this man should not serve in Congress. She's totally right. Ted Lieu actually tweeted about it early on. And he makes the point too, that in any other workplace, you wouldn't be allowed to do that. You couldn't, they're not gonna let you keep stocking the shelves at like Bass Pro Shops if you fantasize about killing the cashier. We have no standards whatsoever for the people that we give the most power to. And in to cover for this, because all of the right wing media is on cover for this, you know, they say, well, Kathy Griffin years ago, she made a threat against Trump. That's true. And I have never voted for her for Congress since then, to be fair. She never served on a committee, actually. She's a random entertainer. And she actually suffered consequences, by the way. Despite not being a congressperson, she effectively, if anybody got canceled for something they said, she basically disappeared for a few years. And again, not a congressperson, notably. Some guy, a random guy, came up to Tucker Carlson in a sporting goods store and talked very reasonably to him. No threats, no anything. And the right lost their mind over that. There was no videos of him decapitating Tucker Carlson or anything like that.
The hypocrisy is thick. And look, I didn't agree with Kathy Griffin. She is a comedian though. So if she was doing that in her comedic role, some people may say, oh, that's distasteful. But we know comedians, you know, they really press it. They go beyond what sometimes is acceptable. Even then, I did not agree with it. But your point is very well taken. The difference between her being a comedian and if people were, you know, rooting for that. No, I don't agree with that. That's their right to root for that. But I didn't, even though it was Donald J. Trump. I didn't like it. She is a comedian. So I'm gonna put that right there. But these folks we talking about right now serve in the United States Congress and they sit side by side. Kathy Griffin don't sit side by side with President Donald J. Trump again, even though I didn't agree with it. But these people that she got to come in contact with these fools on a regular basis, they hold enormous amount of power and people follow and listen to them and they could trigger somebody again that may be predisposed to this kind of behavior and they're making it seem like it is okay. It is not okay. Just like it's not okay for a cashier at a fast food restaurant or anywhere else, a car wash, wherever people are to threaten their coworkers, it's not okay for Congress people to either threaten them directly or indirectly threaten them through an anime video. It's not okay.
Can I ask you a quick question? You ran for Congress, and I feel like if you want to, you will end up in Congress. You will be as outspoken, if not more outspoken, than any member of Congress on many of these same issues.
Bringing the heat.
Exactly. Are you at all worried about, because like they're gonna lose their minds, their heads are gonna explode when they see you, when they listen to you. Are you worried about that sort of thing?
I know that could be the reality. I mean, I am friends with many, you know, I have associates in that Congress, because there's a difference. Hello, everybody ain't your friend. And I do have friends. And I have deep relationships with a lot of people, especially some of the members of the squad. And my heart aches about what is happening to them. But I would say the same thing if it was reversed. If people were making threats on our side against Congress members like that, it is not acceptable. This is not about who's Republican or Democrat, who's progressive or not. This is about common human decency. But yeah, John, I've thought about it. I ended up, and I don't talk about this a lot, but it was the guy, this was maybe about 2 years ago that they caught. He had the van and he had a whole list of people from President Obama to, you know, a whole bunch of people on his list. Senator Sanders was on that list. I ended up on this guy's list too.
Oh, geez.
And I was a commentator on CNN at the time. And I remember my neighbors, you know, coming up to me and my husband saying, you know, the FBI was outside your house and, you know, getting the message. They even reached out to my son, who's in law enforcement. We're looking. And sure enough, you know, to let me know that I was on that list. So absolutely. You definitely have to think about that kind of stuff. It causes you to pause and kind of reflect. And why? And that's what I mean. People like that guy who are predisposed to be triggered by this kind of stuff because somebody of authority told them it was okay. People's very lives are in danger. You never know what might set somebody off. So why would you continue to stoke this kind of stuff? And I know people like the Congress members get it even more, you know, than even somebody that's in the movement like me. So yeah, I think about it often. Yeah.
Yeah, I worry. I worry for, you know, future candidates and I worry for those there right now. I see the threats and the threats have been there for a long time. Yeah, and look, it's the story of American history is, you know, they've been teaching working people to be suspicious of and fear those who might actually make the government work for them. You know, the Red Scare and all that. And now it's, no, fear isn't good enough. You should fantasize about murdering the only people who would ever improve the quality of your life. You should fantasize about killing them.
Yeah.
Disgusting. Okay. We're going to take our first break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about the updates on the trial involving the murderers of Ahmaud Arbery. We'll have that for you after this. Anyway, with that, let's turn to some more unfortunate news. Just yesterday, we hit the second day in the trial of the three murderers, those who killed Ahmaud Arbery. And we are finding out some new information. We found out yesterday, the jury found out that Arbery's final moments consisted of a police officer arriving on the scene and once again doing one of the things that is so common in these sorts of stories, not offering any potentially life-saving aid. Prosecutors said that former Glynn County Patrol Officer Ricky Menshew, the first officer to respond to the shooting, told prosecutors he'd received a call about a quote suspicious black male in the neighborhood wearing a white t-shirt. He testified that he believed Arbery was already dead by the time he arrived. There was a shotgun laying in the grass covered in blood. He said he did not render aid to Arbery because he was the only officer present and there was no one to quote watch his back. He said he did not have medical materials on hand, but that he did call for emergency services. And look, I guess to be fair, devil's advocate, we have no idea if he would have been able to save a person who had been murdered at close range with a shotgun. And I will say that while I think cops often overly play up how terrified they are, I get a little bit why he was scared about having no one to watch his back. He was surrounded by murderers. So I sort of understand that part. But Nina, what do you think about this?
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right, John. That Arbery wasn't the person, obviously, because of what happened to him, unfortunately, but to be afraid of the three men that were on the scene. In some ways, his explanation seems reasonable to me under those particular circumstances, but I won't put a however most often when there are lots of police officers on the scene, they typically do not render aid. They do not perform life-saving aid because the way they are socialized is it is their job to apprehend suspects and not necessarily try to save their lives. So both of those things can be true, that this officer in this particular circumstance could be right, but far too often, more often than not, police officers don't render life-saving aid to the people that they just shot. They just don't. I mean, look what happened at Ferguson. The same thing, what happened with George Floyd. I mean, we can name Eric Garner in New York, same thing. And there were lots of officers. We can give countless examples. Those are just a few. They just are not trained to do that.
Yeah, they and I'm sure there's multiple potential explanations, none of them good. They do seem to, like he's saying there, he believed he was dead. Maybe he actually did, but I can see cops thinking, like wanting to be able to plead ignorance. Like, because if you actually try to save a person, presumably you know more about what's going on with them. There's this very hands-off thing. They'll do anything to save their lives. They'll murder people who don't have a weapon. But when it comes to others, that urgency is seemingly very rarely there. In any event, we got a reaction to that revelation from Wanda Cooper-Jones, who's the mother of Ahmaud Arbery, who told reporters, "I understood he had to go and secure the crime scene, but at the same time, he had a guy laying in the middle of the road in a puddle of blood." Exactly. Protect and serve. Saving lives seems like that would be a big part of that. Anyway, we have a little bit more information. Prosecution said that Arbery was being chased for about 5 minutes. The defense attorneys for some of the murderers say that Arbery was killed in self-defense. William Bryan, who is one of those being charged, told Officer Ricky Menchu that Arbery never spoke to him or to the McMichaels, the other two, as they followed him. Even as the three men asked who he was, where he was from, and if he'd taken anything, Arbery never said a word. William Bryan says, "I mean, this would have never happened, you know. Should I have been chasing him? I don't know." He still doesn't know if he should have been chasing a person who hadn't done anything wrong. That chase resulted in them murdering a man. He's still not sure if it was a good thing or not.
That tells you the state of mind. I mean, the fact, and this is not a one-off where Black people especially have to prove that they belong in a certain place. And this is really what this came down to. A Black man suspicious because he is Black, let's just tell the truth, and them feeling as though he did not deserve to be there. You know, and talking, I think just even last week, Dr. Richie and I were talking about a segment where he reminded people about freedom papers. You know, that there was a point in time in this country's history and not much has changed, a different way to operate, but that Black people had to prove that they had permission to be in certain places. It's the same thing almost that happened to Trayvon Martin, for example, John, that he was chased by somebody that wasn't, you know, in the same boat. None of these people were law enforcement, but the guy said he didn't believe that he belonged there. Trayvon Martin was at his dad's house in his dad's neighborhood, and he didn't belong there. So these psyche, it's the way that we're socialized in this country. It can be implicit, explicit, but it is a subconscious reaction. And unless people deconstruct their construction, first admit it, the good, bad, and the ugly, that these things happen and that you're still happening in the 21st century. We don't got to go back to the 20th century, the 19th century, or even the 18th century to know very clearly that these behaviors are still happening. And they are oftentimes justified by the types of laws that are activated in this country, and also de facto behavior. This was de facto behavior.
Yeah, you're 100% right. This guy thinks that, I can take a shotgun and I can point it to someone and say, "Where are you from?" And you have to answer. Yeah. Now, does he think that he has to do that? Does he think that if Ahmaud Arbery had gotten some members of his family together in a truck with shotguns and had stopped William Bryan, do you need to comply? That's just reasonable. I mean, there's citizens' arrest laws. Ahmaud Arbery can get a shotgun and he can go and try to arrest anybody he wants, right? I have a feeling he probably does not think that would be okay. And you're totally right, by the way, in all those examples that you gave. Like, one of the reasons I'm glad that the like this idea of the constant having to get involved for the worst possible reasons of like Karens that is still part of the news is this is the same thing, just on a different point of the spectrum. It is people policing other people's lives generally for racist reasons. And sometimes they just call the cops on someone who's walking their dog or having a barbecue. Sometimes they grab shotguns and they jump in a truck. And sometimes they follow someone through their neighborhood because they consider themselves part of the neighborhood watch. And you see this so much. So many of these needless, like sometimes they grab an assault rifle that they shouldn't have and they travel across state lines and they murder people who are just protesting somewhere. And so we're going to keep having these as long as we produce a society that tells some white people it is your job to police the lives of everyone else around you. Even if, by the way, you're breaking all sorts of laws in doing this. You shouldn't have the gun, you shouldn't cross state lines with it, all of that. This is what you should be doing. Anyway, let's just jump to this last picture. These are the three men that decided it was on them to stop Ahmaud Arbery from jogging that day. And there is every reason to believe that these guys are gonna get off. I hope.
Now look at the makeup of the jury, for Christ's sake, which we talked about.
Yeah. Okay, we're gonna take another break. We'll mix it up. We're gonna be talking about, I would love to say lighter news. I apologize, but we will be back in just a few. Anyway, with that, let's mix it up, Nina. Let's jump into some other stuff. We are still digesting all of the varied results from last week's elections, and some of them are really unfortunate, even if they're not about particular politicians being elected or not. In fact, in New York, which is supposed to be one of the most progressive states, voters turned down multiple ballot initiatives that would have made it easier to vote in a variety of ways. One of the proposals would have paved the way for lawmakers to get rid of a longstanding state policy that requires voters to give an excuse if they want to vote by mail. 34 states and the District of Columbia allow anyone to vote by mail for any reason. So New York is less progressive in a voting sense than the vast majority of states. Another would have allowed people to register to vote on election day. And so why did these sorts of common sense changes that are already law in a number of other states not get passed? Well, there are some activists in New York that believe they know why. Sarah Goff of Common Cause says there was an assumption that of course it'll pass because it's New York. And unfortunately, we woke up Wednesday morning and saw that that was definitely not true. Republicans and conservatives treated these ballot initiatives like essential threats and moved accordingly. And we just did not see that from the institutional supporters that we would have liked to. In fact, New York's Conservative Party spent $3 million opposing those ballot initiatives. Republicans traveled across the state as part of a Just Say No campaign, echoing national Republicans. They said that they needed to protect against voter fraud, even though it doesn't exist. And the state Democratic Party spent no money on the three ballot initiatives that would have expanded voting access, would have made this democratic state in a democratic country more of a democracy. Nina, this is what happens when only one side actually has any skin in the game.
Outrageous. And while Democrats are playing checkers, Republicans are playing chess. And the fact that the state party of New York did not invest the requisite money into giving these initiatives a fighting chance of passing. You know why they didn't? Because they were too busy comparing the candidacy of India Walton running for mayor in Buffalo to that of David Duke. That's why the hell they didn't do it. And we expand and protect access to the ballot box, John, is not that hard. Expand and protect. And Democrats are failing. They're failing on the state level of government, particularly in states where Republicans control everything, because we're not making the requisite investment in state legislatures to run candidates to stand up. So we're just getting ran over there. And then on the federal level, look at here. Mm-hmm. We got organizations, particularly Black organizations, because of the unique history of Blacks in this country, but voting rights should matter to everybody. But Black folks uniquely begging this administration and a democratically controlled Congress to get rid of the filibuster, pass the John Lewis Voting Rights Act and the For the People Act, which both did pass the House of Representatives. Kudos to them. But it ain't they not going anywhere in the United States Senate because of the filibuster. So I should not be surprised. We should not be surprised that in the great state of New York, the Democrats did not lift one finger, didn't do anything to try to make sure that those measures pass. What are we living in? Why would you not have no fault absentee voting in the 21st century? Why don't we just make voting election day a holiday in the United States of America while we at it? John, I am so upset about this because I ran for Secretary of State in my state in 2014, trying to push back a recalcitrant Republican whose reward for suppressing the vote, for using his power to suppress the vote, is to be lieutenant governor right now. We better wake up and get a clue. I'm just incensed, as you know.
Yeah, they didn't do anything. They were complacent or they don't care. They were Senate Dems asked the party to do something about it. They didn't do anything.
Yeah,
they just didn't do it. It could have easily passed. And this ties back to what I was talking about earlier. Like, these are the people that are supposed to save us from this new Republican Party. They're supposed to protect us.
Yeah.
What's going to happen? Like, you have states around the country that are suppressing the vote. And these are new levels of suppression in states that already had been doing this for decades. They're still finding new ways to make it more difficult to vote. And the Dems could solve it. They just choose not to. They like the tradition of the filibuster.
No, they like, since Shelby v. Holder, John, let's remind the people who are joining us right now, Shelby v. Holder. And you know what that was? A backlash against the election of the first black president. Mm-hmm. Let's continue to have this truth talk here. And Republicans plan for the long game again, and Democrats playing checkers. You cannot win the presidency and the Congress And then meanwhile, back in states across this country, leave state houses vulnerable, governor's mansions vulnerable to this kind of foolishness that then when you're trying to get the very voters that you need to come out to vote, they are hindered to their access. And I mean for everybody, I don't care if they vote Republican or not. I'm talking about expanding and protecting access to the ballot box. And Republicans continue to win the argument on this voter. They know that the likelihood of people walking into voting places trying to imitate somebody else is slim to none. There are already laws on the books for people that will commit voter fraud. Stop playing. They committing voter fraud. Voter depression and suppression is a fraud.
Yeah. Go talk to Glenn Youngkin's son who tried to vote twice despite not being old enough to vote once. Like, problem is coming from inside of your house.
Yes.
And I don't expect that the Republicans do not need to be convinced to embrace democracy. That's not going to happen. They know they can't win in a true democracy. That's why they're choking it to death. So I'm not surprised by that. I'll report on it or whatever. I'll remind you that the Republicans are doing all of this, but they're not the variable that matters. It's the Democrats. That's why, while the Democrats might philosophically supposedly agree with us a little bit, their betrayal of these values is 100 times worse because it's the factor that is actually the difference between us having these bills and not. We're never going to convince the Republicans, but we should hope that we should be able to convince the Democrats, especially in a state as solidly blue as New York.
Here it is.
But we can't. And let's turn to another aspect of this. We're into the redistricting process, and we have been talking for literally years about how ridiculous gerrymandering is and how it needs to be stopped. We haven't had a lot of success in getting Democrats or Republicans to stop this practice. And we're not gonna get Republicans to. I mean, they're gerrymandering the hell out of their states. So let me try to appeal to some current conservatives. Do you know that the Democrats do it too? They are gerrymandering you right out of your representation. For instance, in states like Illinois. In Illinois, the Democrats have put forward their projected map that they might do. Do you know what it would do? It would give the Democrats 14 of the state's 17 House seats. That's the one they're considering. You know, they think if they're willing to be a little bit more risky, they can get 15 out of 17. Now, you might think if you don't know this country, if you don't know Illinois, well, that probably just means that in Illinois, it's a solidly blue state. Not really, Biden won 57.5% of the vote. So look, are they owed more than half of the congressional seats? Yes, definitely. Should they have almost 100%? I don't know. What kind of democracy do you want to have, Republicans? Do you like that the Democrats in Illinois can effectively wipe out all of the conservative thought and desire for policy in an entire state? I don't want the Democrats to be able to do that. I think we should ban the practice. But let's see if you'll come aboard on that. Nina, what do you think?
Hello, somebody. Join us. Come on in. Yes. The water's just fine. No, you're absolutely right. Gerrymandering, whether it's done by Republicans or Democrats, is wrong. It erodes confidence and it takes away from the voters the ability to choose their politicians. It allows politicians for the next decade to be able to choose their constituents. This is not how this is supposed to work. So come on in. Let's have some bipartisan support for getting rid of gerrymandering across the board.
Exactly. Exactly. It's just it's ridiculous. This is definitely the crucial time. You can see in this map, not only look, redistricting can happen all over the place, but some states are going to be losing seats, some are going to be gaining seats, and you can see sort of some of the patterns if we bring up this map. And it could be independent. Like, you do have to have districts, that's true. Just maybe we shouldn't give control over the choosing of those districts to the literal people that will be occupying those seats. And those who own them, that seems like a good sort of core philosophical thing. Anyway, I want to let you know about a few of the specifics of this to give you an idea of how manipulated this is. It's not just Illinois. In 2018 in Wisconsin, former Governor Scott Walker lost by less than 30,000 states statewide, or 30,000 votes statewide, a margin of just 1 percentage point. So it was a very close split election. Republicans won 63 of 99 state assembly districts. That's like damn near a supermajority, despite it being almost a perfectly split state. In Austin, Texas, where I used to live for a number of years, in the 2020 election, President Biden won Travis County, which includes Austin, by 45 percentage points. It was a crushing victory. But five of Austin's six congressional seats are occupied by Republicans. It's a practice called cracking. You take a population and you take a little bit of it and you throw it into a red district. You take another, you throw it into another one. And so effectively, you have millions of people living there and they don't get a say at all. It's a great practice. It's a great practice. You can see nationally, Democrats received 1.4 million more votes in 2012 than Republicans for the House of Representatives. But Republicans retained control of the House 234 to 201. They got less than half the vote. They had an overwhelming majority in the House. And look, that sort of thing is why, of course, trying to appeal to Republicans using the example of Illinois is probably not going to work. Again, they have no faith that they can win honest, fair elections where people are engaged and vote. They believe that they have manipulated the system enough to occasionally have power and they will cling to it, unfortunately.
Yeah, they like it grimy.
Yeah, yeah. And again, like we said, I'm not really trying to get the Republicans on board. It's not going to happen. But maybe the Democrats could do something about this. You've been getting screwed over year after year after year. When are you going to act like you acknowledge it? When are you going to act like it matters? Because it does.
Yeah, it's kind of hard when you're, you know, hypocrisy is a hell of a thing.
Mm-hmm, 100%. Okay, let's close out this hour with a little bit of a talk. We're going to provide a little bit of advice to someone who is arguably president of the United States. Not necessarily the most powerful person, but arguably a president. So let's jump into this video actually directly, if we could do that.
The point is, I didn't run because of the polls. I think what you're going to see is the combination of what I did in the beginning in terms of the Recovery Act and then the and this legislation, as well as the legislation that we're about to pass, God willing, on on what's called Build Back Better, everything from childcare to funding 3 and 4 year olds in school, et cetera. I think all that's going to have a significant impact on ordinary Americans.
So that was Joe Biden being asked about the fact that his approval rating has been going down. Bad poll results, like for instance, 58% of Americans say Joe Biden hasn't paid enough attention to the nation's most important problems, which seems bad. More than a third call the economy the most important thing. Among those group, 72% say he hasn't been attentive, which is bad. And you can try to brush that off saying you didn't run based on the polls. I don't even know what that means. Like in practice, yeah, everybody says that. It doesn't mean anything. And sure, God willing, BBB will pass. We didn't elect God, actually. I think we voted for you. We gave you the power to do this. And so he can see, Nina, that his numbers are going down. It's not difficult to know why. It's in the polls. It's not difficult to imagine what might turn this around. The question is going to be, does he care to? Does he have the ability to?
Yeah, the intestinal fortitude and God willing, God is willing. The question becomes, are politicians willing? Because I would be willing to bet, you know, certainly the God that I serve believes in uplifting and supporting the poor, the working poor and the barely middle class. And those programs in the reconciliation portion of this bill, B to the third power portion of this bill, is what most everyday Americans actually support. They support having Medicare. Medicare negotiate for lower drug prices. I think that's at about 88%. They support making sure that people get paid family leave. Absolutely support it. They support having funding for two-year colleges, which they took out. That's not happening. So the people are on the side of the progressive agenda, and the progressive agenda is really about lifting humanity. And I would be willing to bet that God is in total support of that. So God is aligned. Politicians, are you aligned? Are you ready to do the right thing?
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And I hope that he is. If he is, it really should not be difficult for him to figure out what he should do. But I'm willing to help. I think we could point him in the right direction. When your numbers are going down, you got to figure out something to do. Like, it's been tough for a lot of people, not just Joe Biden. Like the news business. Numbers have been down in 2021. Some responded to that by pushing ivermectin in their content or whatever. I have a more moral way that you can get your numbers back up. Let's jump ahead to the polling. What if there were wildly popular policies that you could champion? For instance, lowering Medicare prescription drug prices, 88% support, 12% oppose. A slam dunk, a home run, put in whatever sports analogy you want. Think about it. If you got that done, wouldn't people like that? What about Medicare coverage for dental, eye, and hearing? 84% support, 16% oppose. Paid family and medical leave, more than 70%. Universal pre-K for kids, nearly 70%. The people are not, they're not like being coy, like maybe I want something, maybe I don't. Maybe I'll tell you, maybe not. No, they're being very clear, Nina, about what they want, and we're not getting it.
That's it. How about that? That's the roadmap. And, you know, all of these politicians are going to have to reckon, you know, certainly from my faith, with there's going to be a day of reckoning. It might not happen today or tomorrow, but eventually we all will have a day of reckoning with the creator. It is, why do you go into public service when you are not willing to totally put it all out there on the line in service to the people who have the greatest needs? The American people have spoken. And John, you just laid it out. And this political affiliation, be damned, the American people have spoken and they want these kind of programs. And while we're patting these politicians on the back, number one, it is our money. Let me remind it, these are our tax dollars. We got to have a social contract with one another. So whether it's BIF, which is the bipartisan infrastructure, or whether it's B to the third power, it is our money. It is our social contract with one another to have these types of services. And two, what you just laid out, John, yeah, you don't even take a lot of courage to do these things because the American people are on your side.
100%. Yeah. Yeah. And it's not good enough to just be like, well, yeah, I want this stuff, but Sinema and Manchin don't want it. Then you have to fight. You have to show that you're trying. Or you could give, you get the whole media together. I'm gonna do a primetime address, 1 hour. And I'm gonna talk about how people have, generation after generation, has been crushed by student loan debt. And that is why I'm canceling $50,000. You could do that. Sinema can whine about it. It's not gonna stop it from happening.
That's right. And we in a pandemic, just John. Let me get that out there too.
Yeah.
There's nothing extraordinary about this stuff in the face of a pandemic. It's what we're supposed to be doing, given the weight of the moment.
Exactly. I wish we had more time, Nina. He desperately needs this help. Maybe we can provide some more next Tuesday. But as always, thank you for joining us.
Well, thank you, John, for your fire.
Thank you. Everybody watch Power Hour and watch the rest of our show, which is coming up after this short break.
Thanks for listening to the full episode of The Damage Report. Support our work, listen ad-free, access members-only bonus content, and more by subscribing to Apple Podcasts at apple.co/TYT. I'm your host, John Adirola. I'll see you soon.